It's time for Friday with Jim, and coincidentally enough, my name is Jim, and I'll be your host, ably assisted by Kate Brister on the engineering board, one of many hats that Kate wears around the station. Thank you, Kate. This show was conceived initially by Lisa Smith many years ago at the when we were having lunch, and she talked me into doing this, and I've kind of been stuck with it ever since. But it's been fun. And always bring in some interesting guests, and I'm happy to have with us here in the studio today Chris McNary from the Astoria Police Department. And we'll be talking about various police type of things. Chris, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. We always like to be part of the community.
And why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? How did you grow up? How did you end up being a cop?
Well, basically, I've been here in Astoria for about 18 years. I was a probation officer for 2 years with the juvenile department. And I decided that instead of having a corner office, I wanted an office that cornered. So I decided to move into the police department and haven't looked back since. Been doing it for 16 years, and I'm currently working as a sergeant in patrol.
Yeah, and you've got some kind of function coming up, Coffee with a Cop. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Most of the time when police have contacts with the public, it's in a pretty negative or an emergency situation, and a lot of times the people we talk to aren't at their best. This program gives the police and the community an opportunity to get together when we're not under stress and sit together over a cup of coffee with no agenda, no plan. We're not trying to get anything across to anybody, and hopefully the community is open to come and just meet their local police department and the officers that serve the community over a cup of coffee.
Are you getting much of a response to that?
We've been doing it for about a year now. I've tried to move it around to a different location each time. We do it quarterly. This upcoming one will be the fourth one that we've done, and we're holding it up at the college to try and reach out to some of the student population, also maybe put it a bug in their ear of maybe thinking of police work as a career. Previously, we've held it at different times. We've had one at the Peter Pan where we were up at the market at night so we could get everyone when they were off work.
Yeah.
We've had it in the mornings. We try to have them on weekends. Try to get every group that we can and be available to anybody so that they can come and ask us questions, tell us whether we're doing a good job or a bad job, just basically sit down with the community.
Yeah, well, one thing you mentioned, but you tend to move into situations that are fraught with conflict in your everyday work. Doesn't that give you kind of an odd perspective on the community?
It does, and this program is not just for the community members. It's for the police, so that the police get an idea when they sit down that the 90% of the people that we never come in contact are still out there. They still want to know who their police officers are. A lot of times people only call us on 911 and only want us around when they're in an emergency, and other than that, they would rather not know about what we do. And this gives them a sense of ownership in the police department, and having a face to put with who the police are really makes us a member of the community right along with those people.
Yeah, you mentioned people are unfamiliar with what you do. Maybe you could kind of talk a little about what you do.
Well, right now the police are in a very special situation. We're moving away from being just that enforcement arm of government where we go out and enforce the laws, and we're becoming more of a referral agency. We deal with a lot of different problems that necessarily aren't criminal, mental health issues, homelessness, where we are now trying to service the community by directing people to resources or to another agency or another service that might not necessarily technically relate to law enforcement, but we're the only number that people know in an emergency, and so it's come incumbent on us to be able to direct people to the service they need, even though it may not be related to law enforcement.
Yeah, well, for many reasons, the state is kind of backing away from a lot of those services, and so these people that need help aren't getting it from the state, so they end up getting it from you.
Well, they are back on the street, and we become kind of a band-aid to a lot of services that have gone the wayside due to lack of funding. And what's really important in that circumstance is building community partnerships with all the agencies, DHS, Child Protective Services, the hospital, mental health, other law enforcement agencies, even the radio, so that we can access information, we can put information out, and building those partnerships, we can use, you know, the dollars that we're giving from the citizens to the best of their advantage.
Have you seen an increase in the homeless population in Astoria?
It's become very, very visible. We have a high visibility population. I was at a meeting a couple weeks ago, and I'm trying to look for what the name of this homelessness is, what's used, but it's this transient population. It increases during good weather in the summer. But we have had a substantial increase of that population that is in need of services, and that's kind of where we've seen that throwing enforcement action, you know, and tickets or arresting is not solving the problem, and that's why we're trying to partner up with different resources to try and direct them to where to go for housing, where to go for food, where to go for shelter, those types of things, because just for us, we are not solving the problem as law enforcement just by writing tickets and arresting people. Sometimes we do have to do that, but we're looking at the long term rather than the short term fix and trying to save not only money, but save officer time by coordinating these services.
Well, you mentioned these services that are available. I'm not sure what they are. Could you kind of talk about some of the services? For example, if a person is... rolls into town without any money and any friends and is hungry, where would he go to get fed?
What we would usually do in that circumstance is, so one of the hubs when they roll into town is the transit center. So what we've done is they have posted all the resources with every day of the week of where they can go for different types of assistance.
Yeah.
And that is where a lot of them congregate, because it is in the center of town. It's a hub. And Astoria is one of the main resources in the county for everything. Social Security is here. We have DHS for food stamps and cash assistance and Child Protective Services. The courthouse is here. Clatsop Community Action for Housing is here. Those are some of the resources that we have available. Some of them are private. We have a lot of agencies that are stepping up to fill some of those gaps that are on the private. Some are churches. Some are just personal citizens that are going out and making the effort to, they start the crowdfunding and have started providing food on a daily basis to the homeless population at the Armory. So there is a set of resources out there. It's not as much as what we would like to see, but there are resources out there that are trying to fill some of those gaps that have been lost due to funding.
Now, a few years ago, there was a push in the police department for something called community-oriented policing. Has that evolved into what you're doing today, or is that a separate concept or what?
A new program starts up every day. There's community policing, there's problem-oriented policing, there's all these programs. Basically what it is we're trying to look more long-term. Police agencies typically are fiscally budgeted, so a lot of times we're looking at how can we solve the problem within our fiscal limits of a year, and we're seeing that we're trying to save money by dealing with something in the short term, whereas if maybe we spent a little bit more trying to solve a problem up front, the long-term dollar savings would be immense. So maybe directing someone into mental health sooner rather than just trying to take them to the hospital for the night and getting them back out on the street the next day may not solve the problem, but if we can get them into a long-term solution of mental health and off the street into housing, some work-related ideas, those long-term solutions help save dollars and save time for everybody.
Another thing that you do, I've seen you doing it, is it's kind of drive around and actually patrol. What is the purpose of that? Just kind of keep an eye on stuff?
It's really funny. One of the studies, we're into this new era of what's called evidence-based policing. And what the police are trying to do is not to just start these new programs out of the blue and say, that looks like a good idea, we can put that in the paper or on the radio and say we're doing something. We're looking at things that are statistically researched to show that if we spend money and resources on a program, we're going to get an outcome. And under this evidence-based policing, what they've shown is this random patrol that we do that's really visible really isn't that effective. And so what we've gone to is either a property or offender-based type policing. We've tried to target locations by using statistics of where crime is, where we see the most amount of suspects or issues, and our patrol areas try to focus on those locations. And they've shown that there hasn't been a success rate of targeted enforcement, targeted patrol. At the same time, last year I did a survey of the citizens of Astoria. And I was basically just asking how safe they felt, how they felt about crime. And I asked one question where they could write any answer they wanted. And I asked them, if you could ask the police department to do any one thing to improve safety in this community, what would you ask them to do? And there were a myriad of answers. But the majority of them were visibility. People wanted they wanted to see a police car or a police officer in their neighborhood, you know, once in a while. Some people rarely see us. If there's not a problem, you know, we rarely will be up there. There's only usually 2 to 3 police officers on duty in the city. Most of the times it's only 2. And so covering that wide area and the population here for 2 officers is pretty difficult to hit every street, you know, every day. Sometimes it's hard to do it even every week. But it was interesting that even though that's one of the least effective tactics, that was one of the things that the majority of the population wanted to see was a police officer on their street once in a while.
Yeah, and that visibility really in a way is, I suppose, driven by budget. In other words, you can only afford to have so many, or we as a community can only afford to have so many policemen because of the budget.
Oh, exactly. And we have to strike a balance of livability in the community. And how many police officers we have is how many firefighters we have, how many parks we have.
Right.
All those things, you know, go towards livability. If we want to sacrifice a little bit of safety, we have a little bit more opportunities to do some of the other things. It's all a balance in what the citizenry wants, and we try to balance that as best we can to make sure that everybody receives the services that they think are a priority.
So did I understand you that most of the time we might only have a couple of officers on duty?
A majority of the time it's 2 to 3.
Hmm.
We have a population of 10,000, a transitory population of cruise ships coming in and dumping 4,000 people.
Right.
It does surprise a lot of people that that's the number that we have out actively working on the road.
Yeah, it seems like that's not very many.
Yeah, it definitely, we get behind quite a bit where we're running from call to call and aren't actually able to actively do some of the proactive policing things that we would like to do that would actually have a better effect than just the Band-Aid effect.
Now, you mentioned certain areas that require more focus than others. In Astoria, what areas would you tend to focus on?
You know, it kind of runs in cycles. Sometimes we'll have a rash of car prowls where we'll start, you know, moving officers into the neighborhoods to patrol, looking for subjects walking around late at night who are scoping out vehicles that are left unlocked. That'll go away for a time period, or we'll have arrested a suspect who is responsible for that behavior and we'll move to another hotspot. A lot of times we'll have a bunch of problems with people drinking in public in certain areas, and we'll focus that. We'll move around in a series of where the problems pop up. That's where we'll move our enforcement activities to when we have time.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to remind our listeners that it's Friday here at Coast Community Radio, and I'm your host, Jim Wilkins, visiting with Chris McNary from the Astoria Police Department, and talking about stuff that people really don't give a lot of thought to, is is our police department, and what do they actually do? I wonder if you could maybe, it might be an oddball question, but can you walk us through a typical day in your work?
Sure. Our officers are currently working 12-hour shifts. Officers will come in, set up a vehicle. We share vehicles. Some agencies drive their own vehicle to and from work and use it on duty. We'll set up a vehicle, get ready for the day. We pass on information from one shift to the next, so we have a little bit of transition for off-going and ongoing officers. We'll read through one of the best means of communication for officers who work those shifts and are off is email. So we review all our emails. A lot of times when we're following up on cases, people will leave us messages and we'll try to touch base with all that. Catch up on our paperwork. Sometimes at the end of a shift, we'll have paperwork that didn't get completed from the shift prior. And sometimes that can take anywhere from an hour to 2 hours before we're actually engaged out on the road. And usually we try to get somebody out and out patrolling as soon as they come on duty. But situations dictate what actually takes place. We also have two detectives that come in and work regular business hours. That was a big improvement. We added an additional detective pretty recently to take up a lot of those things that take time that a street officer can't follow up on because he's going from call to call. A detective can dedicate a little bit more time to doing those types of activities. The officer will then respond to calls as needed, and it just depends on the day, what's going on, who's in town. Astoria is quite the popular area for tourism right now. Mm-hmm. We try to have a new activity every weekend, it seems. And if we don't have an activity, we have a cruise ship, or the weather's just nice and everyone from Portland decides that they'd like to come out to the beach.
Right.
And so we do see a pretty high influx of tourist population come into the area, too. We work all the way through to the end of our shift. At the end of the shift, an officer will come in, download their vehicle. We also have a lot of technical stuff that we have to do now. We have electronic ticket writers that have to be downloaded. The tickets go into the computer system automatically. We have body cameras that are new to the officers that they've taken an immense amount of time to download all the gigabytes of high-definition video to the system. We also have patrol vehicles that have video, and we have to download all that as well. And then we start it all over again with the next shift.
Now, you mentioned tourists coming into town. How does that affect your job? I mean, the tourists, I would think, are pretty well-behaved, aren't they?
They are. You know, rarely people, you know, right now, you know, last year we had the Goonies.
Yeah.
40-year-old people coming into town to come to the Goonies Festival rarely are here to cause problems. But that influx of the population, there sometimes there are targets, a target-rich environment. There's a lot of vehicles. There's just a lot of activities that come along with it. You throw in some alcohol at night. That number of people, there's going to bring a small percentage of people that come to also cause some problems.
And another part of your job, I suppose, is reacting to medical emergencies and accidents and kind of chaos that happens in the community.
We have that large tourist population come in, but we haven't kept up with the roadways to be able to handle that population. You'll see on the weekends in the summer where traffic is backed up all the way through downtown both directions.
Mm-hmm.
Our infrastructure hasn't kept up with the number of people we've brought into town. And so, yes, we do experience a lot of rear-end accidents where people are stuck in traffic for quite a while and run into each other. Thankfully, we don't have a lot of high-profile injury accidents, but, yes, we do have to respond to a lot of hit-and-run incidents as well as ones that happen in traffic.
Yeah, and as we've seen last February, your work, police work in general, and your work specifically, can get pretty dangerous in a hurry. And we lost an officer in Seaside. How did that resonate through the police community?
It's always hard to lose a fellow coworker. I think everybody took it to heart in a different manner, and hopefully it brought the police community, and I think the community as a whole, together to realize that it is dangerous out there for officers out there trying to protect the citizens.
Does that make you nervous?
I think if you're going to go into this line of work, you knew up front that that's a potential risk that everyone in the profession faces. I think that the hardest part is probably family members realizing that their loved one who's out working as a police officer faces that risk. Sometimes, you know, you don't take your work home with you. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes family members have a little bit more difficult of a time dealing with those issues. And we tried to reach out to family members in this circumstance of the entire county of all the officers due to the how profile of an incident was, and reach out to them and give them a little bit of counseling, make it available to all family members as well as the officers involved.
Now, I understand that one of the more risky calls that you guys make are domestic disturbances, maybe you can explain to me how those come about and how you have to deal with it.
People are the most difficult thing that we deal with. You never know what's going to happen, how things are going to be interpreted. We may say one thing but mean another, and the same goes for the people that we're dealing with. You throw into that some anger and frustration, and the police try to intervene. They're seen as an interloper into the situation. Initially, they are there to quell the situation, but then in the end, may have to make a decision that is not as beneficial as the person who called us thinks. When you're taking their loved one from them, who they may have been angry with, and now you're taking them out of the house, then they become upset.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So rather than having one person who's angry at us, now everyone is angry at the police, and it just can become a very volatile situation.
Yeah, and that can erupt, I suppose, into violence.
It can. It's officers go through training on how to de-escalate situations. The most important weapon an officer has is his brain, keeping his head in the situation, and trying to see the situation for what it is and keep it as low-key as possible so that we're not put into a situation where violence is used against us or we're forced to take action against the citizen.
Right. You mentioned training. I'm wondering, could you tell us a little bit about your training that you go through year to year?
Well, how about I start out with what an initial officer goes through.
Yeah, good.
Initial officer now attends a 16-week academy in Salem, covering a myriad of topics from traffic stops, domestic violence, to mental health issues. They run live scenarios. There's a racetrack at the police academy to teach them how to drive.
Huh.
There's a firearms academy. There's defensive tactics. There's a lot of procedural training and legal training that they go through. Once they complete those 16 weeks, then they come back to their agency, and each agency sets their own time limit for amount of time they spend training with an individual officer one-on-one. And ours is currently set at 12 weeks. We can change that based on the experience of the officer or lack of experience of the officer, increase or decrease that time. They ride with an officer and complete what's called a field training manual. They go through basically everything that that has been deemed necessary for an officer to take the streets on their own. They get checked off and then reviewed by a sergeant, and then basically the entire agency signs off on that officer to go out onto the road and perform the duties on their own with another teammate and, mm-hmm. and a shift sergeant. Once that's all completed, officers are at a minimum required to complete about 84 hours of training every 3 years. And that's just to keep your certificate. And we try to to go above and beyond that. We're not training to meet a standard. We're training to make sure we're putting quality officers out on the street mm-hmm. who can provide the services that the citizens have deemed necessary. So we go above and beyond that. Right now we're trying to get to 120 hours of training in that time period, and we try to maintain all those important areas that are required for an officer to be able to effectively perform this job.
So that's ongoing, and for the duration of your career, you're kind of updating your training year to year.
I'm currently there are several officers who, if you look, so they keep track of all our training. We have training
sure.
records. There are several officers that have, if you look at their training record and the number of hours that they have, they've been up to a year in training for their entire career. So if you've had a career of 10 years, one of those years has entirely been spent in training. There's just so many things for an officer to have to know, and so many realms that they have to deal with, that you can never stop training. You can never learn enough. You never be good enough at any of the skills. It's an ongoing process that never stops.
And I would think that once you acquire those skills, then you could help pass them on to the younger officers coming on board. Is there any kind of that kind of a program?
We do. It's one of those cost saving measures that we've tried to institute. It's called train the trainer type of situations.
Yeah.
Rather than sending officers off to different parts of the state or other states to receive specialized training in firearms or defensive tactics or crisis mitigation, what we'll do is we'll send an officer to an instructor development course in one of those fields so that they can bring that back, and that way all the officers can receive the benefit of that training from that single officer,
mm-hmm.
and we can save on overtime, travel time, paying for lodging by having those in-service trainings put on by our own people, and those instructors become better trained as well.
So your training, I suppose, in interpersonal relations, but also you've got physical training. For example, you're carrying a firearm. It takes a certain amount of training to handle that, doesn't it?
It does. The funniest thing is that's probably the one tool we use the least, but
yeah,
is most focused on. I mean, an officer uses his brain and his mouth more times than anything else, and we rarely go to the mind range. But yes, our program is very specific for the Astoria Police Department. We do one-on-one firearms training with a range master, a firearms instructor, with each individual officer every month.
Mm-hmm.
We perform all kinds of different types of training in firearms and our special weapons that we use that are as tools out on the street. But that isn't on a monthly basis, specifically for firearms.
Well, what else do you use besides the firearm?
Well, we have what's called an ASP baton. It's an expandable baton, an impact weapon for controlling situations. We also have what's, commonly everybody calls it the taser, but
mm-hmm.
it's an electronic control device, and we use that as well. It works in two modes. It actually fires a couple of darts on wires out, and it's also can be used in what's called the drive stun mode, and the contact pain compliance. And also we have a pepper spray, which is, capsicum that is projected out of a canister.
Mm-hmm.
And those are our primary tools that we use if we have to. We prefer not to.
Prefer not to, yeah. Well, it's been Friday here at Coast Community Radio, and a fascinating conversation with Chris McNary from the Astoria Police Department. Chris, appreciate you coming in.
Well, thanks for having me.